Mark Coleman's going to present the next presentation. Are you at University of Idaho?
Yes.
Now? Okay. But you were with Forest Service at some point.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So Mark has, I'm going to let him tell you what he's done, but he's brought together a bunch of data in a fairly unique way so that we could go from field scale and try to estimate what's going on in terms of woody feedstocks around the nation. I don't think that you have the NM6 in your data at this point.
I can find it, though. That's okay.
Okay.
That's okay.
Thanks. Thanks, Tris. I really appreciate the invitation to come here, and especially your interest and commitment to including woody crops in this assessment. First of all, yes, I'm at the University of Idaho now, but I should acknowledge that the Forest Service supported me to do this research, and Keith Klein, my co-author, is with the Oak Ridge National Labs. And what I'd like to do today is to talk to you about our approach at estimating yields, which involves discussions with practitioners and their experience in this area, and I'll go into justifying a little bit about that. This program was initiated based on the regional partnership program that's sponsored through the biomass Office of Biomass program, and we're working on the Southeast Regional Partnership to estimate woody crop yields in the Southeast. Just wanted to go through a couple of advantages of using woody crops here. Many of you that are working with switchgrass will recognize that some of the advantages are in common with other perennial crop species. But for instance, for woody crops, we have a diversity of feedstocks available, residues as mill residues, forest residues, as well as woody cropping species possibilities. It's a relatively low input crop. We've got genomic resources, and we've got genetic resources, as Bill was just explaining, for poplar, but also for a number of other species as well. There's multiple markets. So for instance, if the energy market is down, the growers have opportunities to sell wood to paper, for paper or even solid wood products if managed properly. And there's an ancient utilization history that should be acknowledged. But in addition, there's process benefits. There are species that are well adapted for areas. The feedstock has a low ash content, and there is year-round availability. It's a stable supply. It's a feedstock that's easy to store, handle, because it's got high density, and it mixes well with these other various feedstocks. But there's also environmental benefits of protecting soil, water, and air quality, and the production systems are sustainable. One of the reasons is they're sequestering biomass and improving the site. Creating wildlife habitat is another interesting feature. Does that basically through increased structural diversity across the landscape. And it can improve production on marginal farmlands. I'd also like to mention a little bit about conversion technology, because I think it's important to remember that, for instance, biochemical conversion to cellulose from a woody crop species that is high in lignin, and also in phenols that are evolution is designed to combat microbes, is probably not as favorable as thermochemical combustion, either just combustion straight for power, or gasification for power, or through synthesis gases, or pyrolysis. And I'd be happy to talk to you, any of you, about our portable pyrolysis work that we're doing in forested systems with biochar applications. Pretty excited about the possibilities there. Okay, now we wanted to talk about the Southeast as a potential for bioenergy, because it really is one of the greatest renewable resources possible in that renewable energy resources. Wind and solar resources are not quite as favorable in that region, and you can see here just the list of where the native evergreen and deciduous forests exist throughout this region, and so it's really got a high growth potential. We have a scattered amount of trial data in the area. It's not that we haven't been running trials for a long time, but these are when you go to look for yield data for hardwoods or other woody crops in the southeast, we can find a number of bits of information. Part of the reason there is a limited amount of information is a lot of this has been done under private industries, and the timber industry was notoriously proprietary. So much of that information is, even though the industry has fallen into hands of real estate speculators at this point, there really isn't a lot of information, even from those earlier days, available. And when we do look at trial data, we see that it's treated anywhere from no fertilization up to very high levels of fertilization. The stocking rates are those that might be in the hundreds of stems per acre for timber production compared to tens of thousands per acre for what we might call a woodgrass energy type system. And the ages vary, and so as a result the production varies, and it's very difficult to project that kind of information out over the landscape. Really, one of the reasons for this is it's difficult to sustain trials in woody cropping systems where it takes 5 to 10 years to obtain yields when a funding system is on a two-year cycle. It's really difficult to get that additional funding for a trial that's already installed. And so we have very little data. So we took a fairly unique opinion or approach where we asked experts for their opinions of woody cropping systems. And so we basically found a dozen experts that had experience working with especially hardwood crops in the southeast. In combination, there's over a couple of centuries of experience, and most of these folks were selected for their experience growing hardwoods, but they had in general good southern forest silviculture experience. And we asked these experts what the potential hardwood energy crop species might be in the southeast from their opinions, and things like what the management requirements are, the expected productivity, and some of the factors that might affect yields. And we used some props to provide these folks some, yes, they were all guys, some background information, including some of the silvicultural treatments that we might expect management practices, and we also provided them some basis for comparison. So, for instance, all of these experts were familiar with this CRIF system out of the University of Florida for designating forest soils, and really it depends on the depth to the clay layer in the region or argillic horizon. It has to do with the amount of drainage that's available on a particular site and the texture of that material. So we could use this to ask these folks where there were no limitations to growth, where there may be water limitations to growth, or excess water, aeration limitations to growth. And so this allowed us to have some relative understanding of what types of sites might be appropriate for this. And then in the background here is just an overlay of a soils map, where we feel that this approach of knowing what the maximum productivity is, knowing what any type of soil series fits into this CRIF system, we can discount any type of maximum productivity according to the limitations that may be available. Beyond the scope of this experiment, perhaps, or this study, but perhaps a next step in this as far as we try and project production potential out across the landscape. Okay, well, here's some results that we got from these experts, and they appear to be somewhat flippant in their response, but in actuality they are quite true. So what is the best hardwood species in the southeast? Well, everybody says it depends. You know, and, oh, okay. Thanks for the help. But it's true, it really does depend on the site. It depends on the cultural characteristics. It depends on the genotype that's involved. And so that's a flippant but very, very real response. The other thing that seems a little out of line is we asked them what hardwoods, and they all said pine, which is a softwood, of course. And so the reason for that is because the pine is a highly developed system, and it's got a very robust site requirement. So when we talk about the hardwoods that might be available, we were expecting perhaps cottonwood would fall into some high area, because of course the Oak Ridge National Labs has promoted the use of poplar as a potential resource. But it turns out in the southeast the cottonwood is limited in its distribution, and I'll explain a little bit more about that. Really, the most favorable tree was kind of a modest weedy hardwood species, sweet gum. The reason that it is favorable is because it has very low input requirements, it has a very broad site adaptation, and it is a steady growing species. So we can talk a little bit more about each of these, or a few of these, the characteristics from these. I don't really have time to talk about all of the details of this report. But sweet gum, again, grows on uplands throughout the southeast, as well as bottomlands. So it's got a wide site distribution, broad site, robust site requirements. It's a native species, and it's the most adaptable species across the region, found on all sites from Virginia to East Texas. There's no significant pest problems with sweet gum. It's fairly well known. It's been studied by many of these professionals in the past. Everybody has some experience with it, but it's got moderate productivity levels. Okay, we can also talk about pine. Pine has had sustained developmental input in the southeast for over 50 years. There is an elite set of genotypes adapted for every site that's possible. There are other genotypes that are very robust in the locations that they can exist in. There are very highly developed operations. For instance, we can produce millions of very cheap seedlings at any one nursery in the southeast. There's equipment that's very well adapted to harvesting pine. There are information support systems. There are herbicides that work well, and the pines respond to herbicide and fertilization. This is just an example of where you might see an extensively managed pine system, but when herbiciding, we get quite a bit of increase in growth at various locations. But then when we herbicide and then fertilize, we get another enhancement. And so these are some of the reasons why these experts are really favoring this type of a woody crop production system. So when we talk about short rotation woody crops in the southeast, we have to include loblolly pine. Eucalyptus is another very interesting species. There are a number of species that are available that have been grown successfully, has very high production rates potentially. It's stress tolerant, it's very pest resistant, but it's restricted to frost-free areas in the southeast. And so, again, we can get very good growth in some of these low-risk areas, moderate-risk areas, but it's not practical to plant eucalyptus above these frost zones. It's also a non-native, and our environmental friends sometimes frown upon using non-natives. And Bill was talking about the hybrid poplar. These are examples from the Northwest, the Greenwood system in the Columbia River basin. But certainly we have the capability of operating on poplar farms quite effectively. We get good production rates. However, they have high site demand. And so they're restricted to the areas where they can grow. If you grow them off of high-quality sites, you need to fertilize and irrigate them. And irrigation is really not practical for a woody crop system. They have a lot of pests and disease problems. And so many of these professionals were not very encouraging about hybrid poplar. Similarly, sycamore is a very fast-growing species, but it also has high site requirements. It's got chronic disease problems, and we may be able to grow it on a coppice system. For instance, this is resprouting sycamore from a plantation, and if we maintained it at very young, highly productive stages in a coppice system, it may do quite well. This is just an example. I just want to emphasize the point using the drainage systems in South Carolina. But for instance, we might be able to grow cottonwood and sycamore along these bottomland drainages, but probably not in between. And so, you know, I'm just trying to emphasize that if we're wanting to grow an energy crop across the Southeast, we want to have a broad range of site possibilities. If we limit the sites just because we have elite genotypes that can grow fast on there, we're going to limit the development of bioenergy across the region. This is another look at some of the opinions that our experts had. You can see the very high potential of eucalyptus, also the high potential of cottonwood. But also notice that these are in trials. These are in research trials. When we look at cottonwoods in plantations, you can see there's a significant fall down in production. These error bars represent ranges based on management and site potential. So if you put cottonwood on a bad site and you manage it poorly, you won't get very good yields. But if you look at sweet gum, for instance, it's favored because of its ease of management. The difference between the trials and the plantations are relatively small. It's modest production, but that's the reason why these experts are interested in it. There's a number of other options that we talk about in the manuscript that I'll let you read that. And by the way, unfortunately, this paper is not going to be in this special issue. It's in another special issue, and it'll be coming out in Biomass and Bioenergy in the near future. Do we have a little bit more time to talk about the cost of production? I just wanted to use this slide to illustrate the types of inputs that are required the first year. There's planting costs, of course, herbicide, pesticide costs, but then later on there's also fertilization costs. We can manage these systems either with a minimal set of inputs or a maximum set of inputs, and we can get price increases accordingly, but also yield increases. And when we look at those yields or the cost on a per yield basis, you can see that there is certainly a higher cost to the higher inputs, but if we have a low productivity, there is a much higher cost than which might be around 4.5 tons per hectare compared to 9 tons per hectare. Well, all I'm trying to show here is that when we normalize it based on cost, it's going to depend on the level of input that you are willing to afford to it, and also the yields. So in conclusion, the choice of woody energy crops, according to these experts, will depend not only on the conversion technology, but on the site quality, the robust site capabilities of a particular species were highly favored from these experts that have to deal with these plantations. Pine is a good example of a site with a robust site requirement. Hardwoods may have similar results. For instance, we may get to the same kinds of yields with sweet gum or even poplar if we are willing to put the development into it. But at this point, we don't see a lot of support for woody cropping systems coming from the Forest Service, and Department of Energy is focusing largely on switchgrass systems now as energy crop systems. So if we want to develop these systems more, it's going to require a concerted effort, similar to the Pine, 50 years of continual input from both government and private entities. And we can probably project these yields out based on soil characteristics, Sirgo databases and whatnot. And I'd be happy to answer any questions if I have time.
Product.